So what changes if we think about time on the scale of the universe, on the scale of a subatomic particle or a neutron star, a black hole or a thousand galaxies? For writer Mario Lang van Heemstra, it was kind of transformative.
When I was writing the book, it was end of 2018, beginning of 2019. And at least here in Europe, for a lot of people, it was really a time when we really woke up to the idea of climate change. And it was also the time that people started to feel this sort of panic and not being able to breathe because what is coming at us. From this place of worry, also with two very small children at the time, I started to look for something that would give me, like, literally perspective. Because when you have the feeling that the future is no longer something to look forward to, it can make time seem very suffocating and life seem a bit suffocating. And then I remembered this photo.
It's a photo of the Hubble Ultra Deep Field.
When I first saw it, it looked like a lot of fractures, as if something has broken into millions of pieces. What you actually see is 3,000 galaxies photographed in a time frame of 3 months. And it's so, so huge. I mean, we cannot even imagine how big it is. And it's only a fraction of everything there is. This photo moved me very much because from one side, it makes you very small. You can be annihilated in comparison to that. On the other hand, you're yourself in relation to something so big.
Marjolaine van Heemstra is the poet laureate of Amsterdam and also a space reporter. And a few years ago, she read about something called the overview effect, a mental shift many astronauts have reported. Steve Paulson, who is always up for a cosmic perspective, called Marjolaine in Amsterdam to ask what it is.
Yeah, the overview effect is this sort of overwhelming experience, also a sort of change of mentality that astronauts can experience when they look at Earth from space. And many of them have reported on this when they came back. I must say, not all of them. Some of them sort of seemed very immune to the experience. But a lot of the astronauts come back a little changed, having seen how Earth is actually, it's not a collection of all different places. It's a unity. It's like one animal. It really changes your life. I even read that the people coming back from the Apollo program, they weren't allowed to join the army anymore because they were afraid that they would be so soft after this trip that it's ridiculous to fight people because borders are just man-made. So it's absurd. I know that one of them said something like, "Look at that, you son of a bitch. How can we ever fight again?" Something like that.
So you developed a project where you wanted to see if you could find some equivalent on Earth.
Yeah.
Not blasting off into space, but just through our lives here. How did you go about searching for this?
Well, I decided to make a space trip on Earth. So for about a year, I visited a lot of people and projects that were all dealing with the space travel or cosmology. So poets, but also theologians, people in labs that were preparing for Mars missions. That was my sort of being an urban astronaut. And also I realized that if I wanted to have an experience in which I could sort of see unity, I should also do that in my own neighborhood, for example, where gentrification was a huge problem, still is. And I was sort of the face of this gentrification. So I decided, okay, I will focus both on the stars and on the little garden I share with my neighbors to really zoom out and really zoom in at the same time.
I get looking out. Looking into your neighborhood, how does the overview effect play into that?
Well, I decided that besides writing about space and using all those insights in my own life, I should bridge the gap between me and my neighbor, Bob, who lives under me. And Bob is really the face of like the old neighborhood, the people who suffer from the gentrification, the people who feel a big distance between them and people like me coming in and, you know, sort of setting up the neighborhood to what we want and what we need. You don't go to space alone, right? You have someone with you. So I thought I should take Bob as my fellow astronaut on Earth.
Tell me more about that. How did you connect in this larger project of sort of experiencing space?
Well, it was really quite easy, actually. I asked him about his experience and, you know, he remembered the first moon landing, for example. And I asked him when he felt this overview effect, and he told me about walking his dogs and looking at the sunset and having this idea of freedom and connection with everything. Looking at his fishes were very important to him. He ended up giving me the fishes, which I felt a little bit bad about that. But it was his own choice. Only some of them died because I didn't take care of them well enough. But anyway, also we ended up doing a theater show together through the country with this story, and we became very close. We still are.
You also mentioned that you have two young kids. It's not as if you're just going off having these experiences of awe. I mean, you're dealing with the messiness of daily life,
yeah.
Reading, you know, about all the troubles in the world, the wars and poverty and authoritarianism and all of that, while you are seeking these transcendent experiences. And I'm wondering sort of, how do you make sense of the overview effect? How do you put that in context in the midst of all this stuff that happens in our lives?
Well, the thing is, what I think that they see, these people from space, is that everything happens all at once, in the same time, in the same place. Because you see this organism in space and you know, ha, there's a war, there's love, there's peace, it's all there. And it's all carried by this little, well, it's not that little, but from space it is, by this little planet. But also, if you zoom in into your own life, you realize always how everything is existing next to each other, right? So somehow, for me, the essence maybe of the overview effect was the coexistence of everything. Also, COVID happened when I was writing this book, which was interesting because then we had all these interviews with astronauts because they were the experts on living in an enclosed environment. So yeah, that made me feel like an astronaut as well.
Now, I know one thing you did was you started going out at night. You wanted to see the night sky. You wanted to be in darkness,
yeah.
Which is probably a little hard to do being in Amsterdam in the middle of a very lit up city. How did you try to embrace darkness?
Oh, well, that I think in that way, writing this book has really changed my life because I've become a darkness activist almost full time now. We are one of the most light polluted cities in the world, so it's really bad. So I started this project called the Night Watch. This September, we organized our first Amsterdam Dark Festival, and we had 2,000 people going into the night.
Why are you so interested in being in darkness? Why do you think that matters to us?
Well, first, of course, I came into the darkness because I wanted to see the stars. But then, of course, living in Amsterdam was so hard to find. And I started to dig more into the light pollution and what it actually does to animals, to people, how it makes us more depressed, more obese, how many insects it kills. And what I also noticed is when you're in darkness, you experience your surroundings so differently. Not being able to really see your own boundaries, you feel, in a way, maybe what the overview effect can also give you. You feel like you transcend yourself a little bit.
You talked with one astronomer who said that if you really want to get the effect, it just bowls you over, you have to be able to see at least 450 stars.
Yes. Yeah, like 400. Okay, so there's a sort of a boundary for how many stars you need. Yeah, so 450 stars. Well, we don't have that in Amsterdam.
But I mean, it's one thing to look up at the night sky and see the Big Dipper and a few stars and a couple of planets and the moon. It's something else to see literally hundreds of stars. It's an entirely different experience.
Yeah, and the Milky Way as well, I think. That really adds to the experience. Yeah, totally.
Why? What changes, do you think?
It's a sense of something uncontrollable. I think this whole feeling of awe is about not having control. If I look up here in Amsterdam, I see maybe 70 stars and some satellites. So it still feels like a human-made world. And I think if you have this sense of so many stars and seeing the Milky Way, it's like literally uncountable. And that's where the dizziness comes in. And that's where you get lost a little bit. And I think you need this sense of being a bit lost to be overwhelmed because, well, yeah, you have to let go of this feeling of control. And that's why I like walking in the dark so much, because you have to go really slow because you can fall and you never know what's going to happen. And you lose the way, even if you know a place, you lose the way all the time.
So one final question. I was struck by one of your notes at the end of your book about a piece of music that you listen to a lot. It's Max Richter's On the Nature of Daylight, which was part of the score for the film Arrival, which of course was all about first contact with an alien intelligence. Why that piece of music? What does that do for you?
Well, I think it has to do with deep time and how our ideas of time can maybe change by looking at space a bit more. And that film, I've watched it a few times, but it just moved me so much about how we are stuck in this chronological time. And for me, it was a very, maybe it's a big word, but in a way healing to realize more and more how many years things have existed before we came. That even looking at the moon is like 4.2 billion years since it was formed, and all these layers of Earth that are sort of the memory of our planet. So if you look at time, like human time at this moment, it's frightening because we don't know where it's going. We don't know how long we have until it gets really uncomfortable. And for many people, it already is. So it's a frightening time in a way. But then it's a little bit, I don't know if I can find the right word, because I don't want to say like, oh, you know, it's nothing. The planet will restore itself. But it is a little bit comforting that the planet has been there for so long without us. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't fight for it and we shouldn't do everything we have in our power to stop what's happening now. But, you know, Earth will continue and many of these time layers will continue and new time layers will come and we will be part of a new layer and we might be part of the oil that another civilization will use for their transport, whatever. And that somehow is a comforting idea.
Marjolein van Heemstra, talking with Steve Paulson. She's the poet laureate of Amsterdam, a space reporter, and author of In Light Years, There's No Hurry.